Blog Talk Radio.
How you doing this morning, family?
Oh, man, look, I'm good. I can call it, but damn, which way to go with it? I mean, you know, sometimes the news gods just give us so much that the cup truly runs over. And this is definitely one of those weeks where it is so much that it's very difficult to even begin from the beginning. There's sex, drugs, rock and roll. There's everything going on this week. But we're going to try to keep the focus as narrow as possible. Well, that's not true. As widespread as possible, as we tend to do. The ESPYs for this week. And my man put up a very poignant op-ed about that, in which he spoke to his love for the family. And for those of you who are not familiar, that's a different term for his love for the gay community, and how he has absolutely no issues with the gay community at all. However, how could Caitlyn Jenner win the Arthur Ashe Award when Caitlyn Jenner has done nothing? Now, let's remember now, she did not exist until just a couple weeks ago. Bruce Jenner won an Olympic medal. Caitlyn Jenner didn't do anything. So when I read that, that was a very different take on it. And I was like, damn, I never even thought about it like that, to be honest with you. It was just one to think about. Because as we spoke on last week, you need to be extremely careful when you demand equality, and you know when you demand those things, then don't be upset when people call you to the carpet. Because if you demand recognition for her, then understand that that only started a couple weeks ago. That's it. It didn't start many years ago during the Olympics.
Right. Now, I think one of the biggest problems with it is that, you know, like you said, Caitlyn Jenner did nothing. There's a lot of people who came out prior to Caitlyn Jenner, you know, changing her sex, and, you know, it's been a big story. There's a lot of people in sports who openly came out as gay and or whatever their sexual preference was that wasn't the norm in a sense, and that took courage. But this is something that she identified and had been talked about for years, in a sense. Mm-hmm. So, well, yeah, somebody made a joke that the courage was for her to come out there with a dress. You know, that was floating around on social media and stuff. But yeah, it definitely was not an award worthy story, in my opinion. There's a lot of other people mm-hmm. who could have got that particular award. But I think it was more of a publicity thing than anything. I think it was ESPN's way of supporting the transgender community and showing their support for transgender community and make sure they did their part more than anything. So for me, it's an empty award for me.
And then the attacks against Serena have been very harsh since she won Wimbledon. The fact of the matter, though, is most women, pink, yellow, green, black, white, doesn't matter. They have curves. Get over it. You know,
yeah.
I mean, this whole steadfastness to the ideal of a woman being gorgeous because she's a zero or a negative one, or you know you're fat if you're bigger than a two, is, dude, this shit is crazy. I mean, there's no other way that I can really fathom to voice that. It is crazy, in my opinion. It's actually crazy. That ain't healthy, dog. There's no way in the world that being a zero is healthy. When you are that tall, there's no way to be in a zero as hell.
And people with knowledge about health know that being a zero at that height and being active as she is isn't healthy. You know, they know this already. It's not something that they you know, it's not something that they support and they, you know, promote. You know, if you're that tall,
right,
you're that active, you need to be a certain size, you need to be a certain build, and then go from there.
Right. I mean, I don't dine on the swine. Not my thing at all. I haven't directly eaten pork, and I say that directly because I eat out, and there's no way for me to say that something has not been introduced in my food when I've eaten out. I've had a case recently in which that actually occurred when I did not directly ask for, but pork was introduced into my meal. But that's why I always preface that with saying I've not directly eaten pork. But, yeah, I recommend a ham sandwich to all of them. Just a whole plate of ham sandwiches. Just put some bread on it. Shoot something. You know what I'm saying? Potato pizza. Just put some weight on.
But yo, the real reason behind all this controversy is not her size. It's not that she's beautiful. It's the fact that she's kicking everybody's butt, man. And people don't know how to deal with that. People don't know how to deal with that fact that she's kicking everybody's butt, and in some people's eyes, she's beautiful along the way. You know what I'm saying? Like I've already, you know, we talked about this before where, you know, hey, Serena Williams not my cup of tea. But I can see how some people view her as, you know, this gorgeous, you know, athlete. And she has sex appeal. I'll say that she has sex appeal while she's winning. You know, so even her opponents can't stand it sometimes. They hate the fact that she, even when she's upset, she has sex appeal. You know what I'm saying? And she's kicking butt, you know what I mean, just like destroying people left and right. I think that's the reason why she pulled out this most recent or this upcoming Tennessee fan. I don't think it's an injury. I think she's tired of everything she's given to the sport, and it's not good enough. Like, she's given a lot to the sport, her and her sister, and every chance people get, they're talking trash about it. You don't hear people talking trash about Steffi Graf and, you know, all these other ladies who are quietly winning games, winning matches here and there. You know, they're kicking butt. They're steamrolling. They've steamrolled to the tennis world over the last 15, 20 years, you know, and they're going to continue to do it until they decide to hang it up. But, you know, you don't hear about this stuff from other athletes in tennis.
Look. Get over it, you know.
Yeah, pretty much.
There was a lot of hard work, dedication put into winning this stuff. Not that others have not put in work, not that others are not dedicated, but certain folks just have that gift. Certain folks just have that skill. She is one of those folks who is just extremely talented, gifted. She is one of the few that come around every so often to remind us that while we may be good, while we may be great, there's somebody out there that could really put it in. And she is that person. She is amongst those who can really put it in, you know. I'm not going to get stuck on that. Ugly stuff going on, man. Just a lot of ugly stuff, you know, just flowing all around. But this week marked two historical things happened this week. The president is just on a roll, Jack. This dude is, you can't stop a train. And he has T-R-A-N-E. Not T-R-A-I-N, but T-R-A-N-E, like the air conditioners and whatnot, tattooed on his forehead, and he's just steamrolling over folks. So, first and foremost, the deal with Iran was announced. Now, during his press conference, not only did he stick the script, in which there were reporters outlined, he was prepared for whatever question they may throw at him. He went beyond script and took questions directly from the pool. Wow. Then he was asked, in the midst of all of this nuclear negotiation, the most poignant question of, would you be willing to revoke the Medal of Freedom that Bill Cosby received. His response was priceless. His response was, look, there's no mechanism to do such a thing. However, I'm paraphrasing, please don't quote me word. I'm not reading the story. I watched it live. I'm not reading. I'm not going back to rehash. I'm paraphrasing. However, if you take a drug and you give it to a woman or a man, for that matter, I remember him saying that specifically, unwillingly, for the purpose of having sex with him, then that is rape. And I believe that you should be held accountable for that. And the stoicness in which he said that, the energy behind that glare as he spoke, dude, Bill Cosby's done. He's done.
Yeah.
He's absolutely done.
But I never understood why people ask that question or push for, you know, removal of a statue or, well, I guess maybe a statue, but revoking awards and stuff like that. You already gave it to him.
Right. So the moment has already been had. The pictures are already there. The videotape is already there. You can't change that moment.
Right.
You know, Bill Cosby is going to live with this for the rest of his life. His reputation has and will continue to be tarnished and ruined. The Bill Cosby we know today, I mean, has been completely, well, the Bill Cosby of old has been completely overshadowed by the Bill Cosby that is known today. Even with somebody like me, I don't remember, you know, because of what's been going on, I can't think about the Cosby Show or, you know, the old Bill Cosby sketches and stuff like that. I can't even remember those things right now or think about those things right now because of what's going on today. So there's no need to strip him of an award. You can. Dude,
right.
You can ask him to send it back FedEx. You can ask him to send him, you know, hey, I want you to send it to me FedEx. But guess what? You still gave him the damn award.
Mm-hmm.
So that's not going to change that moment. So what is the purpose? People want to, you know, go for the jugular every time that somebody is not who you thought they were. And that really
right.
doesn't solve anything. The biggest issue is making sure that these ladies who were raped, you know, they get taken care of, you know, medically. You know, I'm sure they might have some psychological effects of it. That's what's important. Not taking a freaking piece of cloth and a piece of a metal away from a man who's proven that he doesn't deserve it anymore. At the time you thought
mm-hmm.
you deserved it, now you don't. So what's the point of taking it back?
Mm-hmm. And you know, to your point, to build off of that, yeah, absolutely right. The quote unquote damage has already been done.
Right.
The news headlines are there. You can't go back and erase them. The photographs are there. You cannot go back and erase them. He obviously earned the award beforehand. So
right.
that he deserves it. Yeah. Had we known about these things, then who knows how it would have fallen. It might have been totally different. It might have been the same. You just never know. Because you don't know what timing would have been involved when the allegations would have happened. Would it just been a trickle-down effect, meaning one or two people may have come forward through the process and he would have been given the benefit of the doubt 9 times out of 10. You know, a lot of people, as I said, are hopping on Jill Scott and who wants to believe that their hometown hero, the dude that
right.
is the beacon for them to show others how to make it, quote unquote, whatever making it is and getting out, whatever getting out is to you, but you know, is guilty of such a thing. You know, who wants to believe that? Nobody. You know. So the young man whom played Lisa Bonet's husband, he came out and said, of course Bill Cosby's guilty. Like, yeah. Funny how quiet you were up until this point, you know. But
yeah.
But I mean, seriously.
That sounded like something personal there. That was more personal than
right.
anything.
Exactly. Like, come on, man. You know, kick a cat when he's down. And let's not forget. Well, let's not fail to ask the question, the real question. Why now? Why now?
Right.
Guilty in that, I'm not going against that whatsoever. I think that he needs to pay whatever penalty there is if he is, in fact, guilty. But why now? Why? Why all of a sudden now? This flood of people all of a sudden now? I hold on to my theory that big business did not want to see him succeed. He was in the midst with some other folks of making a major move in Hollywood, and I believe that big business did not want him to succeed. So they enticed some folks to come forward and speak their truth, you know. And
I don't know about that because he's already been successful, you know. And so if this happened 30 years ago, then yeah, you know, I could see them trying to stop him from being successful because, you know, he's the cause. You know what I'm saying? Like, everybody knows
mm-hmm.
who he is. He's been, you know, in all of the sitcoms from the late 80s and early 90s, you see all this in association with Bill Cosby, all on the credits and stuff like that. People use his likeness to make their show successful all the time.
So I don't think that it's a thing about being successful. I really don't know how to call it, but I don't think it's about him making a big move in Hollywood, because I don't think it's going to stop that from happening necessarily. But because there's other people out there that they can partner with to make this thing as successful. I really think that it may have boiled down to people just getting tired of seeing him on TV screen. You know, and I think part of this Bill Cosby kind of did to himself. A few years ago, he just ripped black men apart. And, you know, pretty much just, you know, chastised the hell out of black men and saying, you know, pretty much that black men are lazy, worthless, and we're not doing the things we need to do in our communities to protect our women and our kids. So for somebody to have been committing acts such, you know, as egregious as this, to come out and then say, hey, you know, black man, you're not doing the right thing. I think somebody pretty much really got tired of hearing him say that and stand on this platform and preach like he's innocent. And that's when they decided to come out, because this isn't something that just came out this year. These are allegations that came out a couple of years ago, and it just is really snowballing and taking effect now. But for me, I was offended when he came on the air, the way he spoke about black men. I was offended by it. And, of course, I didn't know anything about the things that he was doing. So I really think somebody got tired of seeing this man, you know, on TV just ripping black people and saying, hey, bro, you're not, you know, so innocent yourself. Watch this. And they pulled the trigger.
Okay.
So sometimes I tell people all the time, be careful how hard you go at people, because, you know, somebody's waiting to go just as hard on you. And that's what happened to him.
I you spoke on pulling the trigger, and one of the things that we wanted to talk about today was the shooting in Tennessee. First off, our condolences go to the victims of the shooting.
Definitely.
There was a fifth person who passed away, succumbed to the injuries just late last night, early this morning, a gunny, and as a veteran, all folks, no matter what shade of a uniform you wear, hold a special place in my heart, so I definitely want to give it out. This is another trial, another case, I should say. This is another case in which folks are reeling. They are extremely emotional and sensitive, and I just hope that as a nation, we don't give more of the farm away in an effort to protect ourselves. Meaning, we all have a right to life, but we don't know how we're going to go or when we're going to go. What we could very well easily do is give even more of our freedoms away to the government as under the guise of them protecting us. And that is a very dangerous and slippery slope for any nation to be into. But when folks are highly charged and sensitive, they tend to react instead of do what they need to do, which is be smart about what they're doing and their actions. So I am very nervous about this moving forward, because it can happen very easily. We can give the farm away thinking that it's the right thing for us to do in order to protect ourselves. You dig?
So are you speaking on the gun control laws?
No, I'm not speaking on the gun control laws, but no, it's not that I'm thinking of. I'm thinking the rhetoric that's circling right now is this is yet another instance where it's a lone wolf whom the FBI and no one else had eyes on, in which they could have
yeah.
if this was a stronger entity. You know what I'm saying? If this was a stronger entity, they could have listened in, they could have intervened, yada, yada, yada. Listen to the rhetoric. It's already circling. They could have listened in. They could have intervened. Now, just a couple of weeks ago to about a month and a half ago, we talked about how the Patriot Act was up, and a lot of those things in the Patriot Patriot Act, I'm sorry, Congress decided to let expire. They were like, oh, it's time to start. It's time to slow down. You know, there's way
yeah.
too much information flowing. There's way too much private information flowing around, floating around right now that is in too many people's hands, and no one's overseeing it. So it's like, let it die.
Mm-hmm.
Just let those provisions die, and we'll come back. You still have your national security interest that will still overtake anything else, but the way the Patriot Act was written, those things in the Patriot Act supposedly, quote unquote, as I do the air quotes, you know what I'm saying, were to expire.
Right.
You know what I mean? So I'm concerned that this will be the way for some congressman from middle America or from the South, more than likely. Let's be honest with where this shit is going to come from. That's where it's going to come from. It says,
mm-hmm.
we need to protect America. And in order for us to do that, we need more, you know, oh, God, now here we go all over again. You know what I'm saying?
That's an easy trap to fall into, because I'm not going to lie. Even last night when I was watching the news and I heard that portion about how he went to Jordan to visit his father and he was there for some months and he came back, you know, to the States and he grew a beard. And I'm thinking to myself, like, damn, like, I know he was on, you know, FBI watch list. You know what I'm saying? Like, why didn't they,
right.
I said the same thing. Why didn't they intervene? Why, you know, why didn't they track him? But immediately I took a pause and was like, look, he is one person of millions and billions of people. You know, this act, you know, is no different from, you know, the cop that was stabbed on the Baltimore City streets. It's no different. You know, you can see it all you want to, and, you know, the suspect could be a known drug dealer. It is no way to track every single person that's on this so-called FBI watch list 24 hours a day, 365, and know their every move and every thought. It's impossible.
Right.
It's an unfortunate situation, but yeah, like you said, it's not something you can't overreact. You can't even react to this kind of situation. You really got to recognize it, stay vigilant, and push forward in making sure that we have the securities that we need to have to prevent stuff like this from happening. You know, somebody from on my Facebook page put on a post saying, you know, damn, now they, you know, do we think it's time for service members in the States to carry their weapons? And, you know, part
right.
of me is like, yes, and the other part is like, no. Because we even had, you know, at Fort Hood, we had two incidences where service members came on post and you know, committed mass murder on post. So I don't want to say that every service member should carry their weapon, because you got some service members who aren't there completely and who might take advantage of the situation and use it for evil. But
mm-hmm.
it might be something to look into where somebody at a recruiting station, they don't have post security, they don't have gates to go through. They might want to have weapons at their stations. You never know. I mean, it's something worth looking into, but definitely not overreacting to this incident.
Well, we don't want to overreact in any form of fashion. And the difference between the wise man and the old man. Or sorry, the young man. The young man. But what is? No, I think it's the wise man and the old goat and the young goat. The young goat wants
mm-hmm.
to run down and try to see how many he can knock down. The old goat is observing and tries to figure out what. I'm sorry. I forget the analogy. I used to remember that story off the top of my head, and I can't think about it. Whatever. Anyhow, that's a piss poor transition. But we have it with us.
Hey, you was trying.
I forgot the damn analogy, but it's okay. It comes back to me, and in about 3 minutes, I'm like, oh, but I can't say because I guess
that's what it was.
So, you know, exactly right. but this week we have Tyrone James with us, and Tyrone James is a addictions counselor. And the reason I reached out to Tyrone is because As the uptick of heroin overdoses is high right about now, and this isn't just your quote unquote typical junkie, whatever a typical junkie is. You know, there are a lot of young kids dying from synthetic marijuana and from heroin overdoses. The use of heroin amongst young folks and their deaths is really becoming alarming. So I wanted to reach out to my man and get his expert advice and opinion on what's going on, and talk also about the 3 o'clock lean, in which we all see if you're ever in Baltimore City, just go Lexington Market and you can see the 3 o'clock lean. You know, saying you see folks just lean, but like they about to fall, but they ain't gonna fall nowhere. But they just lean. They lean in the 3 o'clock. They just walk back up. You know what I'm saying? So good afternoon. Yeah. Well, it's still good morning. Good morning, Mr. James. How are you, sir?
I'm good, sir. How about you?
Hey, welcome to the show, man.
I appreciate you having me on.
Yeah, no doubt. So, we are, well, except for the cuz, you and I are children. We're the 70s babies. You know what I'm saying? We remember the mid, late 70s, early 80s, and for the most part, most of the people that we grew up with, they were smoking weed. And
right.
Then, you know, crack hit the streets and everybody went crazy. However, there was always cocaine. Cocaine was always the Hollywood drug, if you will. The doctors, the lawyers, so on and so forth. Heroin, though.
Until crack was introduced.
What's going on with heroin? What is up with this whole thing that's going on right now?
Well, you have a generation of people that want to be sedated, you know, and heroin and opioids are sedation drugs. So if I can, you know, sedate whatever it is that I'm feeling or whatever it is that I'm going through, you know, even as we look at our children, even the drug dealer, you know, is taking Percocets and
oxycodones,
street name Oxy. So, you know, we just have a generation of people that just want to be sedated, you know, when they come to treatment is what we try to find out. Well, what is the issue? What is the problem? Let's deal with the issue, the core issues. And then, you know, we can kind of understand and get a feel of how to get out of that sedation. But until then, you know, everybody wants to be sedated.
Mm-hmm.
You know, I now, as you was talking about the 3 o'clock lane, I now work for a methadone clinic. And you know, it's very different from the abstinence-based program because, you know, coming into the methadone scene, you know, you have, you know, clients that are, you know, taking more than one opioid or more than one benzo or a combination of benzo, opiate, and amphetamine. And, you know, so it's really weird, you know, why somebody would want to do that. You ask ourselves why, you know, but, you know, we never understand why they do it. Let's understand the issue that's going on so we can deal with the issue, you know. And then we have, you know, society, you know, that pretty much, you know, throw these particular people, you know, under the bus or, you know, around the corner. Y'all just stay over here, you know, we don't want to deal with that, you know. So it's just like a complete circle, just going around and around and around and around until the law gets involved, and then that does no good. So
it's
pretty.
you hit on a couple of things that I want to come back at you with, if you don't mind. The first thing you hit on was you work at a methadone clinic. Now, I was having this conversation just the other night with my one of my coworkers, and he was like, yo, I never really knew what methadone was, nor did I really ever hear about it until you all are telling me about it right now. And I was like, oh, well, methadone, now, to my understanding, heroin attacks the body. It actually attacks yourself physically. It's a physical and mental addiction. And what the methadone does, is it's a synthesized narcotic in which it helps the body wean itself. Tell me if I'm wrong. It helps the body wean itself off of the physical aspect. And then, you know, you also work with the patients, your clients, because I'm sure that's what you all call them, your clients, to help them with the mental aspect, to get them to see that, first off, this isn't the way to go, and secondly, that, you know, there is a better life for them if they remove themselves from this narcotic. Am I not right in that?
You're right. Okay. You're pretty much right. What we do is, you know, the methadone is to, you know, get to a high enough dose that, you know, you can't even feel the hurt with it, even if you tried. You know,
right.
40 and over, you pretty much can't feel the hurt with it. But you can, you know, put anything, most other things on top of it and get, you know, and that's where we're having all of these overdoses. But in the meantime, what we try to do is work on stages of change. You know, it's where my mind is starting to change and understand that I don't want this life. I want to do something better. And then if I want to, once I change my mind, it's, you know, how do I, what in my life do I change? One, you know, I change people, places, things, do something constructive with my life, go back to school, you know, get a job, you know. And one thing I find out that, you know, most of the patients, you know, they have careers or they've had careers and certificates and education, you know, degrees. So it's finding out how do we put it back to use or, you know, opposed to, you know, running to that make me feel good or make me feel numb to all of my issues and my problems. And then, you know, we can start to put things together. And the idea is to wean off the methadone also. It's not to stay on it for 10 or 15 years. But, however, if a person has to, that's fine. But at the same time, as I'm on the medication, it's getting my life together. So my life should be going in a positive direction, you know, the whole time, you know, before I start thinking about weaning off the methadone. So,
well, I think you hit on something earlier that's really important for people that's listening and for people that's going through this to realize is that it's a societal issue that has more to do with coping. You know, I'm a resiliency trainer, and I happen to have a 17-year-old daughter. And what I realized with being a resiliency trainer and having a 17-year-old daughter is that a lot of kids nowadays are not in touch with their emotions. They do not know how to recognize their emotions. They don't know how to express their emotions. They can't articulate their concerns, their feelings. They are so detached from life and reality that when it comes down, when they have to really confront their feelings and their emotions, they don't know how to do it.
Right.
So it's easy to lean on something like marijuana. It's easy to lean on something like heroin. And like you said, and just be numb from the feelings. Because if my 17-year-old daughter is addicted to drugs, when I'm trying to talk to her about her problems or trying to fix her, she's not there. Mentally, she wouldn't be there if she's addicted to heroin. So she doesn't have to confront the issues. She can always stay in this place of euphoria that's
mm-hmm. and she doesn't have to, you know, confront the issue that she's having.
That it's,
and it's just a cycle,
right.
huh?
Right, and it is a vicious cycle, and I'm glad you brought that up because that is absolutely correct. You know, people and especially teenagers that can't think rationally, you know,
right.
and also detached, you know, from reality or wanting to deal with the issues of the way I feel, they are pretty much going to turn into something that makes them feel good. I used to have a group in my when I was in the abstinence-based program, and I used to tell my group all of the time, you know, drugs aren't necessarily bad. And they say, well, Mr. Tyrone, what the hell are you talking about? Why do you say that? And I had to explain to them. I hated this ugly truth, though. You know,
yeah.
I used to try to explain to them that, you know, okay, it could make you popular, you know, and if I'm popular, you know how we want to feel, like we made it. It could, or I could be the one that's buying the drugs, supplying the drugs all the time, so people won't have to come to me. So that therefore that makes me popular, and I don't want to give up that popular feeling. Or I could be shy, you know, I could be the shyest person around, and you know, if I'm a little girl, I can, you know, if I don't, I like boys, but I can't talk to them because I'm shy, then I'll replace it.
I'll pop this Molly, and then I'm good.
Then I'm good. You know,
yeah.
I'm a little boy. Now I'm casting over. I can spit game. You know, and,
yeah.
you know, so then I get caught up in the vicious cycle of the addiction, which they don't,
mm-hmm.
which they aren't told about at the beginning. You know,
right.
now, you know, they tell you, you know, you pop this, you cool. You be the man. You be the girl. When I'm caught up in this grip of addiction, now it's like, now I have to do it.
Yeah.
Now I have to do this, and I'm stuck. You know,
yeah, so,
so
it's important to say that, like, when you say that, you know, it's not necessarily a bad thing. It depends on how you look at your life. If you look at your life and
mm-hmm.
you say that, like you said, you know, I have all these negative traits and qualities about me, and I need this
mm-hmm.
to help me release it, then for me, it's not a bad thing going into it. My thought process is this wouldn't be so bad for me to try it out. Ultimately,
right.
yeah, drugs are bad. I mean, if you drugs are bad on the recreational side of it when it's used for the wrong
yeah.
reason, but when
yeah.
on the medical side of it, we have to have these things. We have to have the oxycodones. We have to have them. You know, every drug that's out there started
right.
in some way, shape, or form for medical purposes and with good intent. But as things go on, people find out how to get on the black market, and it becomes an epidemic more than anything.
Absolutely. And don't get me wrong. Always, you know, drugs are always bad, you know, but
yeah.
when we're talking about the idea of it making me feel a particular
right.
way, then, you know, I don't want to give that feeling up. So, I, you know,
yeah.
so that's what I'm saying. I don't want to ever say that drugs are good. I'm just making
I know
point
what you
when
meant.
I say that. Yeah.
I know what you mean. But you got some people
yeah.
be like, man, what the hell are we talking about? Why
are
we talking
about?
Right. I don't know drugs up.
But weed is good. It's from the earth.
Yeah.
Okay. It's
right.
from the earth.
Yes.
Hey,
yeah.
Hell
and
no.
then
my brother almost burned the house down
good.
Twice, man. My brother almost burned the house down
good.
Twice. He just said nodding and shit. Some weed.
Yeah. Yeah. You know.
It sounds
like, you know.
No, go ahead, sir. Go ahead, sir.
No, I'm
yeah.
saying it sounds
yeah.
nice,
yeah.
but it's not the truth.
Yeah, it's never good. I mean, we have some awful things that happen. You know, I've seen people, you know, almost hit by buses. You know, they're so sedated,
yeah.
so out of it. You know, and then, you know, we're talking about recreational use. You know, they're the highest emergency room visits
mm-hmm.
in our city from recreational drug use, whether, you know, get behind the wheel of a car after using, or I'm just simply in an accident, you know. But they're the highest emergency room visits in our city from recreational drug use. So You know, we don't ever want to put the idea that, you know, that is good and going to make you feel, you know. And I employ us to talk to our children, you know, and with my children, and I have to, you know, make an admission that, you know, I haven't always been on this side. I've been on the other side, too.
Oh,
I've been an addict, you know, and I'm 12 years clean, you know, now doing what I'm doing. But I talk to my children about it all the time, and I encourage them to be honest with me, you know, with my son, catching him, you know, smoking marijuana and having to sit down and explain to him that, look, son, you have this trait.
But people don't realize that, man. If you look at the history of an addict, a lot of times they have multiple people in their family line who were addicts.
Right.
All right, sorry about that, everyone. Sorry about that. I don't know what the heck happened, sorry about that. Sorry about that. Little technical bug. It happens sometimes. It just happened. I apologize. So you were saying that some people don't recognize that they have that, as you said, they have that trait. One of the reasons I stopped drinking is because I saw a lot of my family members abuse alcohol very much so. I noticed that I had a very high tolerance for alcohol. Shut up. In my lifetime, meaning the time in which I drank, I can only remember me being drunk 3 times. The first time was when I was 8 years old. I was drunk as a skunk when I was 8. The next time was... there were 2 times, and both of those times were in the UK, and I was like, I'm good. And I didn't do anything. Neither one of those times did I go out to continue to drink. I was just extremely inebriated, and I decided to chill where I was at, and I enjoyed the rest of my evening just where I was at. In the comfort of my own home, I went to sleep, I woke up the next day, and I was fine. But even that, to me, triggered that there was a problem because I literally did wake up the next day, and I was fine. I was stumbling, mumbling, anything. I mean, seriously, dude, I was fine. It was like only thing I did the night before was drink soda. You know what I'm saying? I was good. I was like, hey, what's up? What's going on? You know what I mean? Boom. And a lot of my friends used to talk trash about me like, yo, you know what I'm saying? How do you do that? And I'm like, I don't know. It's just my makeup. I don't have problems. Like, I don't have a hangover. I honestly can never, ever, ever tell you of a time in which I had a hangover, where the next day I was sitting around just hoping, groaning, like, ugh. But I do feel you, and I do think that people are susceptible to having those tendencies, you know what I'm saying? And they really have to look out for that, because you never know where that addiction is going to come from. And it doesn't have to be a narcotic. I mean, obviously you can be addicted. That was the first time I said that word all day. You can be addicted to anything along the line. You know, some folks have shopping as a habit.
Sex.
Sex.
Yeah, hey. Yeah, right. Some folks have sex as a habit. You know what I'm saying?
That's not a bad name,
I know that I'm addicted to that, but you know that's a different story for a different time. But I want to congratulate you on your sobriety, without a doubt.
Yeah, for sure.
I want to commend you on the fact that you went back and you decided to reach one, each one, teach one, and you grabbing folks and trying to help them going down the same path that you were. I think that it does add a boatload of validity to what you're trying to sell them, because you have been in that boat before. I want to get a little personal, not too personal, though. Why, as you said, you were looking at your son, what got you into the life?
Of using?
Yes, sir.
Mine was more peer pressure.
Mm-hmm.
Growing up in the inner city, trying this, you know, I was, well, you know, I was best basketball star. So, you know, that after that, well, I didn't have anything else because I had this career-ending knee surgery. Now I don't have anything else to be, you know, popular for or, you know, be the man and try selling drugs with family, okay. family members that were already using. Mm-hmm. And I'll never forget, you know, my 21st birthday and said, you know, hey, we putting the stuff up. You know, we gonna get you tore up tonight.
Right.
We're going to get high. We can be high. So you know, I used to always say, you know, y'all crazy doing that, but you know, y'all crazy. I ain't never doing this. And then until I did it, and it was like, wow, everybody don't do this. Yeah, like wow.
You looking around like, what's going on? Why y'all been hiding all this
day? y'all been holding out on me.
Yeah.
So, you know, that was my beginning, you know, and then I got caught up in the grips of addiction, and it got horrible, terrible. And the homelessness and all of that mess.
Well, you know, again, you know, that's what's up, man. Lovely story. I'm glad that you're doing your thing. I want to ask about do you counsel women?
I do.
Or do you mainly deal with men?
Yeah, in my first position, I had only men. In this position I'm in now, I now have women. And it is quite different.
I wanted to speak to you on that seriously because my perception is most women come into the life because of the men they're involved in. Is that a good perception to have, or am I totally off in that perception?
Yeah. Well, yeah. In some cases, in a lot of cases, it's you know following a man that they. You know, for the lack of education from their parents or from the growing up and what they see in a relationship, you know, and now I'm all so in love with this man that, you know, I follow him into bad habit. And yes, it can happen, you know, that way. Or in some cases it's her. she's the culprit. You know, bringing, you know, a man into the lifestyle. But I ultimately want to say this, you know, nobody can make you do anything.
Right.
You know, my curiosity or, you know, and a lot of times it is, you know, pressure, but, you know, I ultimately make the decision to say I'm going to use this substance.
But as men, we do a lot of foolish things for some booty. So
yes, we do.
why can't make you? Like, well, you know, I ain't no punk girl. Give me that right there. Oh goodness.
Yeah, let me do that. yeah, if you land in that hip, butt naked combo, yeah, hit this. And you talking about what? Nah, that ain't going over well, right?
Hey, but ultimately, man, like I always talk about this all the time. It's about decision making, man, and it's self responsibility for everybody. Like I've had drugs introduced to me. You know, lately, you know, our whole entire family, for the most part, you know, are drug addicts. You know, as far as you know, our aunts and uncles and stuff like that, for the most part.
Right.
And you know, my mother was a drug addict for 20 plus years. And my brother sold drugs. So drugs was always around me. You know, living in West Baltimore, drugs was always around me. You know, it was not, I found crack vials in my house. I found crack vials in the front yard, at the playground. I found needles. I found marijuana. You know, I've had many opportunities to use it. I've always thought about using drugs when I was a kid. Growing up, you know, dealing with my mother being a drug addict, not being able to handle the stress, you know, lacking those coping skills to deal with the stress that's associated with being raised in a drug abuse home. You know, I found myself leaning towards it. Like, man, I really want to do this. Why the hell, you know, what's making everybody else do it? Why is that my mother loves this more than she loves me? I want to experience it.
I wanted those things. But I always came back to, hell no. You know what I'm saying? I'm watching the effects of the drugs, you know, on my mother, and I'm watching the effects of the drugs on my stepfather, my uncles, my aunts. I'm seeing these effects. And I'm like, there's no way in hell that I'm going to subject myself to this. It was a decision that I made. The pressure and the thought was always there. You know what I'm saying? So I chose alcohol as my drug of choice. And even that became a problem once upon a time when I was in Germany, overseas. You know, I'm partying, and then I found myself drinking more than what I normally did. But then I thought back to my grandmother. Damn, yo, your grandmother was an alcoholic. You're following down the same path that she was. So I had to choose. You know what I'm saying? So it's always, you always have that decision. You just have to make the right decision.
Right, absolutely. And I do want to say, you know, to listeners, that alcohol is the most harshest drug that we have.
Yeah.
Alcohol. Mm. Yes, it is. It's the harshest, you know, drug to be addicted to.
Because it's so silent, man.
Absolutely. Absolutely. And, you know, I've seen, you know, in my experience, you know, alcoholics trying to, you know, recover from alcohol that almost to their deathbed without this alcohol, you know. But when I must say, you know, that whole tolerance thing, you know, my wife has that same thing. I've seen this lady before we got married, you know, she stopped drinking now, but, you know, could put away, could drink, we go out, she could drink, what's that, tequila shots and Heineken and walk a straight line. And, you know, it was scary. You know, and until she, you know, she realized that she needed to stop drinking, and now she's becoming also an addiction counselor of herself. So
that's right.
But, you know,
I saw your Facebook announcement. You know what I'm saying? I saw your Facebook announcement. Forget about the Joneses. Let's keep it with the Jameses. You know what I'm saying?
And it's interesting that you say that, because, like, I see often on Facebook, and I'm noticing the trend that they're searching for more addiction counselors, because it's such a problem, man. Like, our country has been riddled with drugs, in so many different ways. You talk about the violence associated with drugs, and you talk about the death associated with drugs. We're going at a staggering rate. For example, just yesterday, a good friend of mine, her family had suffered two losses within the last week from drug overdoses. I have a partner who I hope he's listening right now. I have a partner who just told me yesterday that his son has been suffering from heroin addiction over the last 9 years. And my hope is to put him into connection with you, Mr. James, and hopefully he's in Tennessee. If I'm not mistaken, he's still in Tennessee. But hopefully you can provide some resources for him. But, you know, that was surprising to me, because, I mean, for 9 years, this man has been suffering, you know, going through this addiction with his son, who lost cousins and aunts and uncles to heroin overdoses, and they just don't stop.
Yeah. Let me add on. Before I'm going to touch off, I want to add something on to that. That what happens, the thought process of an addict is, you know, to hear about the good dope that somebody OD'd off of, is that you know,
they
now every addict want to go get that drug, go get that particular one, you know, because, you know, the thought is my system is stronger than theirs, or they didn't use it right. Or they just did too much of it, and then they wind up getting this particular drug, and you're having more and more overdoses, and it's sad to see, because you have so many young people, you know, dying just this morning, you know, being in the work hand, you know, a young lady, you know, lost the battle for an overdose. And then it's sad to hear. So I send my doses to your friends, you know, to your homie, and you know, have to say it.
Yeah, definitely.
You know, because they didn't have to die that way.
The crazy thing that you brought up, we keep hearing, I've heard a lot more women lose their lives to drugs in general, whether it be crack, heroin, cocaine, whatever the case may be. I've heard it's a lot of women who battle. Like I said, the other friend of mine, you know, she lost her, you know, the people she lost were two women. One is 21, well, one was 21, and one was in her 40s. You know, and they're young, and I mean, it's covered from all ages, man. Like you said, Levon, like when you were first drunk, you were 8 years old. Listen to the age that alcohol was introduced into your life, man. You know, I remember drinking a beer. I remember drinking a beer on my fifth birthday. You know, grandpa laughed, you know what I'm saying, drinking a beer, eating a cupcake. You know what I'm saying? So these things are introduced to our kids' lives at a young age, man. We definitely got to be careful and teach them earlier, sooner than later.
Yeah, it's, you know, education is the key.
And Todd, you know, I don't want to keep you much longer, brother. I know you got a life to live, and we appreciate you coming on. But parting words, what would you like folks to know about their choices on how to get out of whatever addiction they are, and how might your services benefit them? How can they connect with your service?
You can call 211 and ask for first call for help, and tell them exactly what it is that's going on, and they will direct you, you know, to what it is that you need, you know, whether it's, you know, where I am, whether it's another center somewhere, but you know, it's 211. And asking for a first call for help. But first, you know, we're talking about decision making, you know, is to, you know, teach our children to be, you know, strong in their decisions. You know, it's okay to say no. You know, it's okay, you know, talk to your children. Don't just talk at them. Allow them to talk back to say what's going on, you know, in their lives, and we can educate them, you know, with, you know, with what we know. And if we don't know, you know, employ help. You know, that line, that 211 line is there for a reason. It's there to help. And I would encourage any and everybody listening to have a family member who need education, dial that line. First call for help.
Cool. Okay, so there's no excuse for you being high and say, I can't remember, you know, 10 digits. You got 3 digits to dial. 211.
Absolutely.
No excuses. You know what I'm saying? If you're not knowing what the hell the damn number is. You know what I'm saying?
Yeah.
So,
well, thank you very much, sir, for your time. We hope you enjoyed us as much as we have enjoyed you. Very informative.
Yes, I have.
And, again, sir, I really do appreciate you taking time out to come on, and I hope that you listen in later and you keep yourself open for us if we need to, if and when we need to tap your shoulder again. So you can share some more
anytime.
Information with us, okay? Thank you, sir.
All right, thank you.
Thanks a lot, man.
Anytime.
All right. All right, so this week was the second – well, I'm sorry. You wanted to recap?
Well, I mean, I just want to say real quick, man, that hopefully somebody listening will take the information that was given to them today and really make moves towards helping their family member, friend, whoever the case may be, relieve themselves from addiction. You know, it's an epidemic that we're going through right now with drug addiction, and it's devastating across our country in so many different ways. So I really appreciate that gentleman coming on and sharing his experience and putting some reality to the problem, man. So I appreciate you having them on, man. And we really got to fight this thing together. It's not an individual battle. Trust and believe me.
No doubt. the second week of the president's, the second leg, I'm sorry, of the president's historical week was he was the first sitting president to visit a federal prison. He went to Oklahoma to visit a federal prison. I know I sound like I'm repeating myself, right? In an effort to highlight a fair justice system. So he met with inmates. I saw some footage of that. He's obviously, well, I caught it. I didn't get it all the way out.
Number two.
I know that's number two, right? He met with staff and talked to them. This was in line with his pardons of some almost 50 folks he pardoned.
Yeah,
right.
46, I believe.
There you go, 46, yep. He pardoned and earlier in the week because their sentences were extremely harsh. I mean, these were folks who committed low-level, non-life-threatening crimes, non-violent crimes. And
sometimes first offenses.
Sometimes first offenses. And they got some extremely harsh sentences. Now, that is in the forefront, but the backdrop, I caught this story from the beginning of the month. A young man down in Florida, he was convicted and sentenced to 162 years in prison without parole for a series of crimes he committed when he was 18. And the way he said it and his lawyer said it was, you know, he has a life sentence. He's never been convicted of anything before. This was his very first, the series of crimes were his very first series of crime. And it's basically he's convicted to die in prison. His lawyer has branded the sentence for a series of Florida robberies, cruel and unusual punishment, and cites the fact that his client was not charged with harming anyone physically. So that is in the backdrop of what the president is already talking about now. Don't know if things will change for that young man. I hope that they will on a lot of different levels. First level is he understanding that what he did was contrary to the norm in society. And then also, you know, yeah, he needs to serve time because no matter what, if he harmed anybody or not, he still hurts somebody in some form or fashion.
Yeah.
You know what I'm saying? So he needs to think about that. He needs to sit down and think about that. I'm not opposed to that whatsoever. But 162 years without parole, come on now, Shawty. We can do a little something better than that. And it's odd. I saw a post just the other day. I think it was Finland or Denmark, one of the two, and it was talking about the difference in the prison systems there and the difference of the prison systems in the United States and how why did we get away from correction facilities, first off? But, you know,
I'm glad you asked that question, cuz.
Words are important. I had this conversation with three people on three different occasions during this past week, and them not understanding how vital words are. Words are important. So when you put somebody in prison, where is the hope for them? You put someone in a correctional facility, there should be some hope for them. Right. There should be a plan for them to serve their time, repay society for whatever debt that society is owed, yet still put them in position to reintroduce them back into society when the sentence is over, not have them in a perpetual system of despair and desperation because they committed a crime when they were 17, 18, 19, 20 years old. Now they're 45, 48, 52, 54, whatever, and they come back on the streets and no one wants anything to do with them whatsoever.
Yeah.
They can't vote. They can't get a job, even the most basic job. Now, in every city, there's a list of companies that the departments of correction have in order for parolees and stuff to get a job. True. However, how often is that truly possible if every parolee is going in to get a job? I mean, you know, what if my skill set, as Mr. James just said, I have a great skill set. I have degrees, but I'm a drug addict. I have great skill set. I have degrees. I'm a drug addict, and I'm homeless. If I'm homeless, I can't get a job because there's nothing for you to reference me against. So how am I supposed to be a viable member of society if there's no net there for me? There is no net.
Right.
I'm falling through the cracks every time and all the time. I'm sorry, cousin. You give me that look. Go ahead. I said correction, and you said what? Go ahead.
No, so you asked the question of, you know, what changed? What changed was, and it goes along with another article that was just posted, I think yesterday, how the private prison systems in Maryland are threatening to sue the state of Maryland if they don't keep the prisons full. That's the problem. This has become an industry of money making, opposed to an industry of protecting and serve and corrections and rehabilitation at the same time. You know, you protect and serve the community by arresting the people who are causing harm to the community, and at the same time, you're rehabbing those who can't be rehabbed. You can't rehab a murderer and put him back out in the streets in 10 years. No, you can't do that. But you can rehab a petty drug dealer. You can rehab somebody who's committing petty crimes as far as, you know, larceny or, you know, robbery and stuff like that. Maybe not an armed robbery, depending on how egregious the crimes were, how often they've been convicted of armed robbery or you know, accused of armed robbery. Every situation, you know, may vary and have, you know, some different circumstances. But overall, we've definitely gotten away from rehabbing, and it's become a moneymaker. These companies are suing the state of Maryland if they don't keep the prisons full. Now, what do you think the state of Maryland is going to do? They're going to fold. They're going to, you know, make good on their promises to keep these prisons full. You know, it's not going to be, you know, a thing where, you know, okay, we'll take the loss and we'll take the lawsuit and we'll pay you out. No, they're going to keep these prisons full as much as they can. So that's what happened, man, and it's sad.
But let's drill that down. What is that going to cause? That's going to cause quotas. That's what it's going to do. It's going to cause quotas because now folks got to go out and find crime. They got to find crime. Or they have to be extremely petty over, you know, things that need to be dismissed in order to be able to keep those prisons whole. So, you know, whereas with this young man, it would have been not necessarily him, but, you know, he had a string of things going on. But with some of the folks that the president pardon, you know, first-time offenses, so on and so forth, where it should be a thing of parole and probation, some jail time and parole, whatever. You know, now these folks are going to go to jail for an extended period of time just to keep those numbers up. Judges are going to pass harsher sentences just to keep those numbers up. It's a hustle, man. It's a hustle with human casualties. Seriously.
It just speaks to the greed of our country, man. Like you said, we throw lives away for cotton. You know, let's get it right. It's not paper. It's cotton. You know what I'm saying? We throw lives away for this cotton, man. I mean, I don't understand how you can value somebody's life compared to a dollar bill. I don't understand it. And again, if you do the crime, you pay the time. I am a firm believer that I don't give a doggone if you're 40 years old and never been convicted of a crime before, never been locked up before. I don't care. If you commit a crime at 40 years old, then yes, you should serve some time. But the time should be reasonable in the fact that, okay, if you're 44 years old, you commit a petty crime that normally would, you know, give somebody 4 or 5 years. Right? It's your first offense. You might do two. You might get sentenced to 2 years. Give you time to go ahead. Like you said, think about what the hell you did. Get your life back in order. You know, pay your debt to society and come back and be productive. Because what's happening is it's a revolving door. You know, we have family members who we make a joke about all the time that they're visiting home. You know, when they get released from prison, you know, they're visiting, you know, and they'll be back in prison pretty soon because it's just a cycle.
And part of it is their fault, and the other part of it is the way the structure of the correctional systems, they're not teaching them anything. Very few people go to prison and are able to earn their degrees and or GEDs and get an apprenticeship or some of that. Very few people are afforded those opportunities because of the size of the prisons. There's so many people in prison, you can't afford that opportunity to every prisoner. You can't. So if you got a prison, if you got a prison filled with, you know, 2,000 inmates, probably 50 to 100 are going to get that opportunity. But half of those people will be released at some point in time and go back to society. So you're talking about another 800 prisoners or inmates that's going to be released at some point with no kind of skill. Nothing is going to make them productive. They got skills. Yeah, you're right. They get prison skills.
Or how not to get caught next time.
Right, because they know the system so well that they prolong things and it costs taxpayers money. They're going to court at your trial after trial after trial, and you know nothing good is coming from the way our criminal justice system is structured, and that's the reason for the push of the president's criminal justice reform. People need to understand that.
All right. I want to hit something so we can cut out, man, because I apologize for the background noise, family, but we're having a studio upgrade, and we thought that we were going to not run into one another, but unfortunately it happened. So let's do the INN before we get out of here. So,
where to start, man?
Look. Okay, so the HIV-positive police officer, he's charged for lying about his status and having unprotected sex with six women. Now, it is as it sounds. This joke is going around telling folks he clean and all, everything's all good, and he out here having unprotected sex with them. And he got caught. He's a Green Acres police officer. If you're not familiar, that's in Florida. He discovered he was HIV positive in 2007 and has allegedly had unprotected sex with multiple women since then, including group sex on at least one occasion. And in 2014, three women came forward to file complaints, which led to his arrest. Now, three more women have come forward. One of the newest victims says that when she confronted his name is Irvin St. Clair, about his status, he laughed it off as a false rumor started by a bitter ex. So now he's locked up doing some time. He's now being held at Palm Beach County Jail on $15,000 bail and faces six counts of uninformed HIV-infected sexual intercourse. His trial is set to begin in November. It remains unclear if any of the women contracted the virus from him. That has not come out. Then, Georgia, so we'll stay south. This broke just the other day. The mistress of a man kidnapped his wife, drove across state lines into Alabama, shot and killed the wife, and then shot and killed herself. Now, I know we will do some foolish things for some good booty. I did not know many women would go out like that over some good wood. But that whole thing went down, I think it was Thursday?
The 7th, is that the former NFL Thursday. Player?
Former NFL player, yep. His mistress kidnapped his wife. She was taking out the joint, too. She was taking out the joint. So she waited for the wife to come outside, grabbed her, threw her in the car, rolling with her. The highway patrol got on their tail. She rolled into Alabama, pulled the car to the side of the road, reached in the back, grabbed the pistol, shot the wife in the chest, killed her on the scene, then turned the gun on herself and killed herself. So that's how that went down. Yesterday, Michelle Blair, 36, was sentenced to life in prison with no chance of parole for the killing of her two of her four children. So that was the young lady who killed the kids and then stuffed them in the refrigerator, the freezer.
Yeah.
So she's going to jail for the rest of her life. I don't know where the other two kids are going, but Child Protective Services or another family member, but she's the Detroit woman who killed two of her four children and stuffed their bodies in the freezer, was sentenced to life. And I don't regret none of this. I don't feel no remorse for the death of them demons, according to the New York Daily News, Blade 36.
She did say that.
Well, yes. Reportedly, she killed her 13-year-old daughter, Stoney, in 2013, and 9-year-old son, Stephen, in 12. Blair claimed that the two children were caught sexually abusing her younger children, although the Daily News points out that she never filed a police report over the alleged assaults. Blair pleaded guilty to first-degree murder in June, and during her trial, she confessed to torturing the children before killing them, stating that she poured scalding water on the victims, beat them with sticks, and put trash bags over their heads. So this was your way of inflicting punishment, the judge asked. Definitely, Blair said. During the sentencing, Blair added that she was fine with what she did and didn't care what anyone else thought. As horrendous as everyone thinks I am, that's fine, Blair told the judge. Blair's two surviving children, ages 17 and 8, have been placed with an aunt, according to the news outlet. And, oh, Lord have mercy. Okay. So, going back to Florida, Pinellas Park. Now, that's also in the Miami-Fort Lauderdale area. There was the Don't Judge Me challenge goes terribly wrong for a teenager, Fair Marshall. When the teen attempted to do the YouTube challenge, calls for participants, the challenge calls for participants to mark their faces with ugly markings using makeup or markers designed for skin. Once the participant appears on camera with the undesirable, the participant then transitions into a more attractive person. The challenge has been heavily shared on social media and has been performed by thousands of people. Unfortunately for Marshall, the challenge did not go as planned. The team used a Sharpie permanent black marker and colored her entire face pitch black. When the team tried to wash off the marker of her skin, it did not fade. The team then dialed 911 and was rushed to Northside Hospital. She will have to undergo skin graft surgery, removing skin from her back and buttocks. I don't think that's totally true, but I'm pretty sure there's something that could get that out. But if not, then, hey, get what the hell
you get. To be her. But hey, but real quick, man, this is what's sad to me. You say that this is an ugly face contest and it's something that's been going on, and she decided that this was an ugly face to her. However, all races are taking bits and pieces from each other and applying it to their lives. You got white people who tan, you got black people who want their skin lightened, you got, you know, white people who want the booties bigger, you know what I'm saying? You got, you know, black women who get breast enlargements or you know, or change their hair color and stuff like that. We all mimic each other. So how is it that all of a sudden having a darker face is an ugly face? I don't get it, but sucks to be her. She deserved what she did. Take the skin off your booty and put it on your face. Ass face.
Every time she walked by, I'd be like, I smell something. Oh, it smells like
ass. Your face smells like ass.
Internet sensation Tyrone, according to TMZ, internet sensation Tyrone was shot three times after attempting to violate Texas man's wife. Internet sensation Tyrone Jones, 34, was shot three times in the chest after approaching Darnell Williams, a resident of Houston, asking to have a moment with his wife, implying engaging in a sexual act. According to eyewitnesses, Tyrone aggressively approached Williams and was asked several times to leave the property. When Jones and his crew refused to leave, Williams pulled a 9mm pistol out and shot him three times in the chest. Jones' crew immediately explained that it was a prank which was being filmed. Williams then dialed 911 to report the shooting. Well, even though it was a prank, it was just stupid. He deserved to be shot, said Williams' wife, Sarita. Jones was rushed to the Texas Medical Center. He is expected to recover soon. I'm just happy to be alive. I was just trying to see what his wife was willing to do, says Tyrone. Darnell Williams was arrested on the scene and charged with aggravated assault with a firearm and possession of a firearm by a convicted felon. Williams was currently out on parole and has no bond. Authorities also charged Tyrone with criminal trespass. Williams will be arrested upon his release from the hospital. Tyrone Jones wrote, yeah, that's just stupid. Just stupid.
Have you ever seen those videos before, man?
Yeah, some of it, yeah. I've seen, but
ignorant
to me, it's ignorant. So I don't pay attention to that bullshit. You know what I'm saying? And the last bit that I had, and I'll let you jump in wherever you want to jump in, was a former Uber driver accused of sexually assaulting a female passenger last year is now facing charges in 5 unsolved Boston rape cases dating back almost a decade because DNA linked his dumbass to those cases. And that's where I will end. What you got, Sam?
Well, first of all, we have Brittany Griner and her spouse.
Oh, yeah.
They added again, man. So they added again. So I guess now, I can't remember her wife's name. My internet is not acting properly right now, but her wife is seeking $20,000 in spousal support.
Yes.
And like another $10,000 in attorney fees and all this other stuff that's going on. Again, added again.
Hey,
she's pregnant. She can't
work.
That's
what happens when you get married. That's what happens when you get married.
It's cheaper to keep them, right?
You know,
it's cheaper to keep them. I guess even in their situation. But another one, man. I don't think I was able to post this on the site, but this is something interesting that I thought that was again interesting with a little bit of entertainment, but it spoke volumes. There's a website called whitepeople.org. Have you seen that?
Yeah, I saw it. Where they help black people get the privileges of white people.
Right. Funny as hell, mm-hmm. man. And you know, for a second, I was like, man, I don't know if I should be offended or if I should go ahead and join this website. You know what I'm saying? Because, mm-hmm. you know, but it's the truth, though. You know, for me, it was a good way to address racism through comedy. I think it was a genius way to do that. I know some people, are offended by it, but hey, get over it, get a sense of humor, get a life, you know. But if you want to, they really have a website. That's what got me. Like I tried to call the mm-hmm. phone number, it didn't go through, but they actually have a website, you know, and they address those different issues on the website. Funny as hell.
Gloria Johnson.
Huh?
Gloria Johnson is Brittany Griner's wife.
Gloria Johnson. Yeah, there you go.
Mm-hmm.
Got it. That's pretty much all I have as far as the ignorant news for the day. You pretty much hit on everything. The black face was one of mine too. But yeah, that was interesting.
Don't do that. The woman that printed the money, she was printing her own money because she was told that Obama made it legal. Come on,
yeah.
dog. You put me on to that one.
I told you my internet not working right now, so I'm kind of behind. But yeah, man, like the thing about it, she was actually mad. Like these bitches print money all the time, so why can't I? But my thing is, what made her so damn ignorant? I thought it was genius that she tried to print her own money. Yeah, if I had the balls to do it, I would do it too. But first of all, she printed it black and white. In some cases, she took she didn't have one sheet of paper. She had pieces of paper glued together. You know, even if you use that on a glue stick, it's not going to flatten out all the way. She had some pieces that were upside down on the other side, so one side was right, the other side was flipped up the other way. Then she had colors mix and match. She had black and white mixed with the green, the two shades of green. She had those mixed in together sometimes. So she was pretty damn ignorant, and I think if we had an award to give, I would give her the freaking award for the most ignorant person in the news today.
No,
that would be my vote. Who what's your vote, man?
The church that sent the woman a bill for $1,000 because she didn't pay her tithe. That is the most ignorant shit that I've heard.
It's very ignorant, man. But guess what? A lot of churches do that. So that's why, while it was ignorant as hell, they should have sent a freaking collection notice to our house. But a lot of churches do that. A lot of churches will cancel somebody's membership if they don't tithe perfect, as they're supposed to. So while it is ignorant, old girl still got my vote. It's a tie between, it's like, she's like right above the ugly face girl, because now she got us walking around with an ass face. So.
And family, please, we did not gloss over Sandra Bland. That's a story that's developing out in Houston. I've reached out to some folks down in Houston to try to get some on-the-ground information from that. Obviously, that was the third time. God dang it.
That's cool.
With me having...
We're going to help you out with that, Chris.
Yeah, for real, right? That wasn't bad. Three times, that's not bad. With me just having left the area, I feel as though I have some... the potential to get some good information from out of the area.
Obviously.
So we'll see. We can shut up. We'll see what we can come up with from that, and we'll do it right. I don't want to just glaze over it or rehash all the same stuff that is in the local news, because we have a footprint locally. So I'm sorry, the national news, because we have a footprint locally. So I would prefer to see what I can come up with on that end, and then take it up, you know. But this is definitely a tragedy. This is definitely something that I know the DOJ is going to get themselves involved in, because there's nothing that adds up right with this situation at all. So we are definitely on the case. We will not let this thing lie nor go quietly into the night, but we're going to do it right. And that's where we are on that. But I need to go. Because we need to get out of these cats' way so they can finish doing what they need to do. But we thank you all for joining us this week. Thank you, Tyrone James, for coming on and offering your services to us and hopefully helping some folks find their way out of the darkness of addiction. Family, as always, we appreciate you. We appreciate you joining us and giving up your time, be it live now or in the hash a little bit later, when you get up and start moving around. But until then, until next week, I'm going to try to get out of here and go see the Gold Cup is actually here in Baltimore, the quarterfinals. So I'm going to try to see that today. That's my goal. That's my plan. It may not happen because I got a couple other things brewing too today. Some really good stuff is happening, family. And as soon as it comes more solidified, then you'll be tipped.
Yeah, definitely. I'm excited about it, man.
That's how it is. Yeah, man. So that's how it is. That's how it be. You all be safe. One love. Y'all take it easy now. Till next week.
We on it. Come on. Out. Yeah.